You know, the older that I think we get in life, the more I think we begin to feel the tension that this song's actually talking about. We feel this tension that I think on one side of this tension is this this picture or this image of a life that we all come into this world with, which is I guess it's one of great optimism, right? It's a picture of endless possibilities. It's good. But then it's like as we start actually living our lives, and as we start engaging and interacting with the world around us, what happens is we start to realize that our life is one long journey of collisions. Collisions. And as those collisions happen, we become aware of them. It's like our dream of that picture-perfect life starts getting disrupted, right? And we find ourselves colliding with all kinds of things. We find ourselves colliding with things like tragedy. We find ourselves colliding with things like turmoil and relational schism, division, upheaval. We find our lives colliding with things like failure. For some, our lives, they're colliding with abuse, shame, loss, and all kinds of other things that at the end of the day bring a great deal of pain into our lives. Well, a couple weeks ago, we began a series that we're continuing today. It's a series called Repurposed. And what we're doing is we're looking at different areas of our lives that, frankly, we oftentimes need to see God do something with. We need God to repurpose. If you're with us last weekend, we talked about failure. It's a big one. If you missed it, you can download it online. But we talked about failure and how to respond and how to perceive failure in our lives so that God can actually do something good through it. Well, what I want to explore today is something that I think is in many ways similar to failure in the sense that it's something that impacts all of us. It's something that all of us experience in our lives. And not only is it something we all experience in our lives, but in much the same way we experience failure. And what happens when we experience failure, quite often we don't know what to do with it. And because we don't know what to do with it, what often happens is this thing starts to sabotage our lives. And of course, what I'm talking about is what's called pain. Pain. Now, this year marks 16 years since I started full-time pastoral ministry work. And, you know, I'm only 21. So, you know, I was like 5 years old when I started. It's the youngest ordained minister, you know. But yeah, 16 years that I've been in pastoral ministry. And then, of course, before that, I mean, I was raised in church. My dad was a pastor. And so I've been around church all my life and around ministry all my life. And through all of that, man, I've seen my fair share of pain in people's lives. Whether it was the times I remember phone calls in the middle of the night, tragedy that occurred, or even things like divorce in people's lives that you would have never imagined. Loss of all kinds, loss of jobs, things like abuse, death, even suicide. And in fact, I mean, even looking across this room, there are many of you, or some of you, I should say, that I've walked with you through some of the most painful seasons of your life. And anyway, all that to say, it's interesting because I think as a pastor, and probably not just as a pastor, I think probably most of us could relate to this, but I think it's so easy for us, and it doesn't take much often to look around and find stories of pain that are a lot worse than ours. And to find stories that, man, you look at and you go, man, what I've dealt with pales in comparison to that, right? And so we look at our lives and we think things, you know, or we say things like, man, you know, my life is actually pretty good. I don't have anything to complain about. Or man, it's like, man, I have nothing to complain about compared to so-and-so. And the thing is, as a result of that, and because we do that, what happens is we oftentimes start ignoring or suppressing or minimizing the pain that we've experienced in our lives. Okay, can I tell you something? Listen, one of the most difficult things for me to accept in my life was that just because my life might look pretty good compared to everyone else's, or just because, you know, my story may not seem as dramatic as someone else's story that I've heard, or just because my childhood maybe didn't look as broken as someone else's did, the fact is I'm still human, and those around me are also human. And so really, if you think about it, I mean, regardless of whether or not your story is filled with real obvious or dramatic brokenness, the fact is, whenever human beings are interacting with each other, there are going to be times when we hurt one another. There's going to be times when we bring pain into each other's lives, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. But there's going to be times that we're going to experience disappointment. We're going to experience the pain of anger, the pain that comes through being let down or betrayed. There's going to be times we experience loss, death. There's going to be times we experience all types of pains, and no matter how much we try to avoid it, we all of us, every one of us, regardless of if it feels huge to you or not, all of us experience very real pain. And not only do we experience very real pain, but what else is also very real is the impact of that pain in our lives. And it's right there that most of us have a lot of trouble. Knowing what to do with our pain. Especially the kind of pain that I want to talk about today, which is pain that I guess, well, we just call it emotional pain, all right? Would you say that with me? Emotional pain. Now, emotional pain, I think, is probably one of the most difficult kinds of pain because it's the kind of pain that we don't always see, at least on the surface of our lives, right? It's easy for us sometimes to kind of hide that or to compensate for it or whatever. But it's the kind of pain that shows up a variety of reasons in our lives, right? Some of which we're very aware of, some of which we're not always aware of, sometimes because we don't want to be. Other times because we just didn't know how to process it and deal with it when it happened. But emotional pain, okay, so emotional pain, if you think about it, is like this internal pain that is under the surface of our lives. And yet here's the reason this is so important to talk about is because not only is this pain internal, and it is very internal, but the thing is, when we ignore emotional pain, when we fail to deal with emotional pain well, you know what starts to happen? Is that internal pain starts to make its way out and it becomes external pain that begins to really mess with our lives. And it really begins to impact the way we see and the way we deal with ourselves, the way we deal with others, and almost always the way we deal with the people who we love the most. Our husbands, our wives, our children, and our friends, the people we lead. The fact is, and a lot of us are scared to death of dealing with our pain, scared. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. It's not because we're bad people. You know, I think a lot of us are scared to deal with our pain because maybe some of us as men, maybe we didn't have that modeled to us by a father or by a male figure in our life. Maybe as a woman, perhaps you were taught that like to deal with your emotions, that's just not a proper thing to do, and so you shouldn't deal with them. Or maybe again, it wasn't modeled for you. And so here's the thing: what you have is a lot of people who, in order to function in their lives, learn to do all kinds of things with their pain. Like for example, you have a lot of people who will just deny their pain, right? Just pretend that this thing's never happened. Or you have people who, when they're confronted with their pain, the only thing they know to do is run, right? It's like the lizard brain kicks in, and they go into survival mode. And so when there's a threat or when the pain starts to show up in their lives, they pull a Forrest Gump, right? They just run, Forrest, run, they go. And sometimes literally, they go, they run, they abandon, they leave. Job, family, relationships. Some of you, you experience that in your life. And yet here's the thing, no matter what you do, whether you deny it, whether you ignore it, you suppress it, you run from it, the pain is still there. It's still there. And so in order to deal with that pain that is still there, what a lot of us do is we move into a place of soothing ourselves, right? We soothe ourselves. Right? We look for relief from that pain, because pain doesn't feel good, so we look for relief. And so we turn to all kinds of external mechanisms or external things to bring relief or to distract us from our pain. You know, and the funny thing is, a lot of times when we think about, you know, the ways people soothe themselves is we go to some of the real hardcore issues or some of the, you know, the socially unacceptable things, right? We think the person who abuses alcohol, or we think about the person who, you know, develops some addiction, you know, porn addiction or drugs or whatever. But do you know that oftentimes it's things that are much more subtle than that? Oftentimes it's things that are well, in and of themselves, not even necessarily unhealthy, and that might even be socially acceptable and might even be good, right? I mean, if you think about it, you can actually have a couple who's married in a committed relationship who use something like sex, which is a good thing, right? God invented sex, right? But there are people who actually use sex to distract themselves from dealing with their pain. You know, some people use, technology, right? Facebook, right? So some people use, television, movies, whatever. I mean, things that even, you know, that in and of themselves aren't bad things. They're fine, right? And the problem is, though, when it's those kind of things, it makes it a lot easier to justify doing them. You know, I mean, think about this. Gosh, I mean, you can be doing the right things for the wrong reasons, right? You can, think about how many people are in a, the gym is what it's called. Obviously, I don't soothe myself by going to the gym. Oh, gym is what it's called. But I mean, listen, there are people who turn to things like physical fitness to distract themselves from dealing with their pain. Right? There are people who turn to serving in the church, volunteering. I see it all the time. People who get involved in community things, activism, all kinds of things that are really good things. The problem is they're soothing themselves on it. They're distracting themselves from some things that are going on beneath the surface. And here's the thing, no matter what it is, I mean, you could fill in the blank, all right? When whatever it is you want to mention, when it's being used as a way to distract ourselves from dealing with what we need to deal with, all right? When we're using things like this to soothe ourselves or as a Band-Aid to kind of make ourselves feel better, or we're using them to avoid dealing with our pain, well then listen, man, it starts to become a huge problem in our lives. Right? See, and the reason that it's such a problem is because we end up with this. Look, what is it, like 10% of an iceberg that you can really see? Right? Visible, maybe 10% of it. The same is true for our lives. Same is true. It's like that 10% above the water. Well, it represents the visible part of our lives that other people around us see, right? And so what happens is we learn how to manage that top 10%. We learn how to, we learn how to be nicer people. We learn how to be more respectful. We attend church regularly. We clean up our lives of fill in the blank, right? We maybe start, drink a little less, or stop cussing so much, or whatever it might be. Meanwhile, the roots, what's underneath the surface, goes completely unaffected, stays the same. It actually gets worse. And I'm going to tell you something. The crazy thing about all this is that this is just as much of a problem inside of the church as it is outside of the church. As a matter of fact, I'd be willing to bet that it's actually worse inside of the church. Because, I mean, if you think about it, like this whole idea of like emotional health, I mean, you know, people weren't talking about this in society 20 years ago, let alone the church. And the church is always slow at picking up on things. And so, you know, it's like the church just hasn't always made room for talking about these kind of things or to even allow us to have these kind of conversations. Or we're so quick sometimes to throw out all those scriptures and to take them out of context. We say, well, you know, hey, look, the old is gone, the new has come. You're a new creation in Christ Jesus, right? The old is past. So forget the past, move forward, press on. Well, that sounds really nice. But the reality is, and what we have to understand is we actually have to understand what those old things are if we're ever going to get healing and experience something new. We've got to come to some understandings of what that old looks like and how it's impacted our lives. Listen, let me tell you, so much of the mess that we make in our lives are because of what's underneath the surface. So much of it, more than we realize, man, in our marriages, in our relationships, my Lord. Parents, man, look, we often take things out on our kids that have nothing to do with them. And I know that sucks to hear that, but it's true. Man, how many times, you know, we say to our kids, you know, like, hey, stop being such a pain. Stop it. Dear God, stop being such a pain, right? Well, you know what? What they're actually doing is they're actually showing us our pain. And we don't know what to do with that. And so we take it out on them. See, this is why you can have leaders, right? Some of you worked for bosses or you've been around leaders who, on the surface, they looked really good. They had a lot of charisma, a lot of energy. They were funny. They were sharp, all these things. But underneath the surface, they were completely unteachable. They were controlling. They were manipulative. They were insecure. They were defensive. And that stuff would leak out and mess up a lot of people. It reminds me, speaking of leaders, this last week I read this, ran across this story about this 80-year-old Australian priest who got into a fight over a parking spot in a parking lot with another priest. And, yeah, and the 80-year-old priest got so mad, he went Mike Tyson on the other priest, bit his ear off. For real, bit his ear off. Like look, that's not just like, well, I burnt my toast this morning and I'm just really PO'd. And so I'm just having kind of a bad day. No, listen, man, that's deep stuff right there. You're biting people's ear off. Like that, there's something going on beneath the surface. Father, go get some therapy, friend. One pastor to another. This past week, I got an email from, let me back up because there's this quote I want to show you that I think really hits the nail on the head. Richard Rohr, who is a Catholic priest, but he never bit anybody's ear off that I know of. Just kidding. But he said this. This is really such a great, great thought. If you do not transform your pain, you will always transmit it. You know that to be true. Some of you know that to be true because you were the recipients of pain that someone else did not see transformed. And so they transmitted their pain to you. Hurt people, right? If you don't transform your pain, you will always transmit your pain to others. We're scared to deal with our pain. We're so afraid of our pain. I received this email this past week from a guy who's been in our church for years, and last weekend, I think I'd mentioned that I was talking about pain this weekend, and he sent me this email, and as I read it, I just had this overwhelming sense that if he would be okay with it, I would like to read it to you, because I think it echoes probably where a lot of us are at and what a lot of us feel. And so I asked him, and he said I could read it. So let me just read this to you because it's pretty powerful. He said, "Hi, Scott. When you spoke of dealing with pain in your next teaching, I'm assuming you're referring to emotional pain. I must admit that I'll probably have a difficult time hearing your teaching, yet I know that I really need to hear it. I've been struggling with emotional pain since my childhood years. In fact, if there were ever a poster child for someone whose potential as an adult has been beholden to painful childhood memories, then I am that child. While I was growing up, I got a lot of negative feedback from my parents, especially my mother. I think that my parents were hurting and dysfunctional people, even though they tried their best to raise me. Somewhere along the line, though, I began to believe what they were saying. I began to own the crap they were dishing out. I now realize that I need to get help so I can be healed and become the person that God wants me to be. And yet, I am terrified of what might be uncovered. So I've never really taken positive action on this. And so here I am, almost 60 years old, and I still can't seem to lay this old baggage to rest. And now my biggest fear is that I will die without being healed of all this baggage. Talk about feeling stuck. I'm looking forward to hearing your talk." I'm guessing there's some of you can totally relate to that. And it's not so much that you don't recognize that there's pain in your life, but you are just scared to death to confront that pain. You're scared. Thus the reason we need to talk about this. Because I'm going to tell you something, and I say this to you not as someone who read this in a book, but as someone who is really starting to understand this. And what I say to you is that there's hope for you. There's hope. Speaking of hope, there is this one story that, as I was thinking about this talk, it just kept coming back to me. And I in fact, it's one that comes to my mind often when I'm thinking about pain and suffering. But it's in John chapter 11, and I'm not going to dive real deep into the story. You can read it when you have time. But the story is about these two women. They're two sisters, actually, who are grieving and dealing with the death of their brother. His name is Lazarus. And we're told that what happened was Lazarus got really sick and he died. And so, you know, here are these two sisters. They're completely distraught. They're overcome with grief. And you realize in times like that there's just some things you aren't in control of. And so they're hit hard with this pain and because they realize there's nothing they can do. And so they do the only thing that really makes sense to them. They reach out and they call for Jesus. And what happens here, I think, gives us, man, such a beautiful picture. Because here's what we're told. And I'm just going to read just a couple verses here. John chapter 11, verse 33. So Jesus shows up, and here's what happens. It says, "When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. 'Where have you laid him?' he asked. 'Come and see, Lord,' they replied." And then it's here, this next verse, where there are two of the most powerful words found anywhere in the scriptures, and they're these. Jesus wept. Jesus wept. Did you say that? Jesus wept. I always liked that verse when I was a kid because it was so short. It was like one I could actually remember. But as I've gotten older, especially in the last few years of my life, as I've journeyed through my own pain, my own grief, my own brokenness, it's almost like the more I've begun seeing how much depth there really is in those two words. Jesus wept. I've shared this story at funerals. some really hard ones. And you know, the thing about this story is that while it doesn't necessarily tell us, you know, what our reason for suffering is or you know, our reason for pain, it doesn't necessarily tell us why we're suffering or why there's pain. But you know what it does do is it does show us what the reason isn't. And that it isn't because God doesn't love you. And that it isn't because God isn't listening to you. It isn't because God is indifferent and doesn't give a flip about your life. It isn't because God has left you or has abandoned you. No, 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 no. Because this God came down and he moved into the neighborhood. And he moved into our humanity and chose to be with us. With us. Which means that he understands. It's not a cliche. He understands. So we can go to him, and not only can we go to him, but we can trust him with this thing that we're so afraid of. We can trust him with our pain. Now, I got to tell you, man, you know why I think this is so important? I don't think this is important because, you know, just so that we can feel better about our pain. All right, I don't even think it's so that we can, like, have a better perception of God. I don't think that's the ultimate reason why this is important. I think the reason this is important is something much deeper, and it goes back to something some of you probably heard me say in our Ethos series, but it goes back to ultimately why Jesus came here to begin with. And see, some of you, you need your theology ripped apart a little bit because you're missing this. So focused on just the divinity of Jesus that you're missing what the humanity of Jesus actually means in your life today. See, the reason Jesus came on this earth was not just to show us how to be, you know, nicer people. All right, Jesus did not come to this earth to you know, teach us how to be better Christians. All right, Jesus did not come to this earth just to show us or inspire us to, you know, go start a religion. No, no, what Jesus showed us is what it looks like when a person lives in the fullness of who God created them to be. Jesus showed us that in a way that no one had ever been able to show us that up to that point. He showed us what it looks like when our lives are aligned, what it looks like when we live as whole human beings, whole, and what it looks like when there's alignment, right? What it looks like when we're aware and we're paying attention of what's going on spiritually, physically, intellectually, socially, but also what it looks like when we live with this awareness of what's happening emotionally. It's all important. It all matters. See, that's why ultimately you can't separate emotional health from spiritual health. You can't separate it. You could try, but all you'll do is you'll end up becoming one of these people, and if you grew up in the church, you know exactly what I mean. People who on the surface, they look like really good Christians, right? They know a lot of the Bible. They know how to pray really well. They know all, you know, they attend church a lot. They might even give a lot of money and all these things, but their lives are not being transformed. And that's proven by the fact that many of them walk around being judgmental, walk around being harsh on everybody around them, walk around being passive aggressive, walking around living lives that aren't transformed. See, ultimately, you cannot be spiritually mature and yet remain emotionally immature. You can't. Ultimately, it's all connected. It's connected. And that's exactly what Jesus showed us. But do you know what we miss? It's right in front of us, but we miss it so easily. What we miss is how even when it came to Jesus, when it came to his path and his life, we completely miss the fact that it required him to confront and to ultimately embrace his own pain. We miss that. That pain that eventually led to death. The death that eventually led to what? Resurrection. Resurrection that eventually led to what? Ascension. See, we want resurrection, we want ascension, but we don't want to have to go through pain and death. See, we'd much rather focus on the resurrection part. I mean, churches grow a lot more if we can just focus on the resurrection part. I mean, we prefer that, or dealing with the pain, or definitely dealing with death, for Pete's sake. That's cute. See, the baby calmed me down a little bit. See, the problem is, we'd rather stay over here in resurrection and ascension. The problem is there are no shortcuts to resurrection. There are none. Death and pain always precede resurrection. Always. See, the same is true in your life. Same is true in mine. Death and pain always precede resurrection. Now, I always try to be really honest with you. Some people don't want that. Some people want a pastor who, you know, appears to have it all figured out. I don't really struggle with that. But I could choose not to be honest, but, you know, people keep coming back, so I figure I'd just be honest until everybody stops coming. Then I'll just be me being honest with myself and my family, I guess. But anyway, but I got to tell you that for me personally, Scott Hodge, not the pastor, the person, okay, these past couple of years have been learning what to do with my pain, what to do with it. Pain that has come through all kinds of things in my life that probably up until I reached, I don't know, maybe in my early 30s, mid-30s, a lot of pain I didn't even realize was impacting me to the degree that it was. So for me, like some of my pain were things like pain that came through growing up in the church and watching my family go through pain by being treated very harshly and poorly by quote-unquote Christians. Watching the pressure of that on my father to the point that he suffered from a nervous breakdown. And not only did he suffer from a nervous breakdown, but he suffered from a couple of heart attacks, one that ended up taking his life. A lot of pain there. Pain that came through the betrayal of a close friend. Pain that came through, pain in my marriage. Some really, really hard seasons. Pain that came through, the grief and the loss of my father, who was my best friend, my mentor, my dad. Pain that came through my own failures, my own disappointments. A lot of pain. A lot of pain. More than I realized. And I got to say, these past couple of years, man, it's been about dealing with that pain. And it's an ongoing journey. But what it's done, and you know what? Somebody asked me, like, how was your year? Because one of the things I do at the end of every year I go away and I just spend some time reflecting on the year before. And this year I found myself, believe it or not, it sounds crazy, I spent 20 hours documenting and reflecting on this last year. 20 hours. And I couldn't figure out why it was taking me so long, but it was. And it was like, I must have had like, five or six journals. It was ridiculous, you know? But as I begin to reflect back and as I begin to look on this last year, you know how I sum it all up? I would say this, 2012 was a year that God was showing me areas of my life that had become disconnected. Areas of my life that had become fragmented. Areas that I needed to allow God to begin working with me in so that I could move into a better place of wholeness. It's quite a year. And I have to tell you, like, I'm not a counselor, I'm not a therapist, psychologist, whatever, but can I just tell you, there's a couple things that I would just like to share with you that might help you. And I guess what I share is just here's what it looked like for me working through my pain these last couple of years, and what it continues to look like. Because here's what I started to see happen. I started seeing things in myself that I knew weren't coming from a healthy place. Responses, behavior, reaction. Things were triggering me that I always thought it was the other person, you know, and it's something about them, because we can always find things in people that they need to work on, right? But it was like, you know, I started seeing things in my parenting. I started seeing inconsistencies in my leadership, in my friendships even, in my marriage, man. It's like all these things that were so close to me is where I really started seeing a lot. And you know, as I begin to see some of these behaviors, what I realized was kind of the first thing I had to start doing was I had to learn, and this was hard for me, but I had to learn what it meant, what it looked like to truly be still. Just be still. Just be still. I know it's hard to imagine this, but like, I'm not great at that. Not that funny. No, I suck at it because, you know, my tendency was always to be moving and going and doing, always, right? And so what would happen is whenever that pain would start to show up in my life and I would feel that pain, what I would do, I had this tendency is I would move into, you know, I would lean into my humor, right? I would lean into my drive, my busyness, even things like writing, or going speaking and doing certain things, right? I mean, I would do whatever I could do to distract myself from dealing with what was going on beneath the surface. Can anybody relate to that? And so for me, like, it meant I had to slow down. I had to really understand. Look, and you guys remember, we went to Thailand this past summer. We were there for 6 weeks. That might have been one of the most important things that's ever happened in my life, because for 6 weeks, I had nothing to fall back on. I had no sermons that I needed to write. I had no emails, no phone calls. I mean, I'm halfway. It's like God had to take me halfway around the world for 6 weeks to show me what it means to actually be present. And I started getting it there. Like, I started understanding it, what it meant to just be present. And so I started leaning into some spiritual practices, things like solitude. Meditation, you know, things like even just silence, just sitting silent. Various contemplative practices, things like that. And here's what began to happen. As I begin to just learn to be still and to truly be present, what started to happen was I started waking up. I started waking up. I started to become aware of what was going on in my life. I started to become aware of things like my pain. I started to become aware. See, because here's what I learned, okay? Listen, some of you need to hear this. When it comes to emotional pain, the more we avoid it, the more we try to distance ourselves from it, the more powerful it becomes. See, when you're younger, for whatever reason, it doesn't show itself as much. You start getting into your 30s, you know, man, it starts to surface. It starts to show itself. It starts to come out sideways, you know. And so for me, it was like, man, I had to learn how to be aware of what was going on beneath the surface. So I started paying attention to a couple things. Like, for one, I started to pay attention to what I was feeling. In fact, I've learned now, just ask myself that question at any given moment. What am I feeling right now? What am I feeling? Driving down the road, maybe I'm in a conversation with someone, I'm a phone call, I'm whatever, you're doing anything, right? But asking myself, what am I feeling right now? Do you ever ask yourself that? What am I feeling? Not judging yourself, but just asking, what am I feeling? What emotion am I feeling right now? Am I feeling angry? Am I feeling sad? Am I feeling like I want to beat the crap out of everybody around me right now? Right? What am I feeling? Am I feeling jealous? Am I feeling a tightness in my chest? Am I feeling pain in my body? Am I feeling stress in my shoulders, my neck? What am I feeling right now? Can I tell you something? For some of you, just starting there would be a huge step. Huge. Just being aware of what you're feeling. That would be huge progress for some of us. But then I think it also meant for me taking it a step further and saying, not just what am I feeling, but what am I doing? Let's look at behavior, right? What's happening behaviorally as a result of my emotions, right? I mean, am I withdrawing from some relationships right now? am I in a place where today everybody around me pretty much sucks? You ever one of those days where you're like, man, I don't know what it is, but everybody just sucks today. Everybody. It's like even the dog sucks. Everybody sucks. I don't know what it could be, right? You pull up in the parking lot of your work and nobody passes the parking lot test. Everybody, you're angry that everybody's there. They're here. Ah, I hate everybody. Everybody's a mess. You got a lot of things to deal with, all you people, right? You know, I had to look at my behavior. Am I treating someone too harshly? Am I being inconsistent to my staff? Am I being inconsistent with my wife? Am I being inconsistent with my children? So those were big questions for me. What am I feeling and what am I doing? But can I tell you what else I had to do? So being aware also meant I had to start seeing, and God started showing me this. I started seeing ways that I was distracting myself and soothing myself and keeping myself from really dealing with what needed to be dealt with. Even good things. Good things. Ministry things. Church things, right? It's so easy to do that, friends. It is so easy. Oh, man, listen. It is so easy to keep ourselves distracted from the real issue. But do you know what the problem is with that? Listen, the more we do that, when we start to soothe ourselves and we start to distract ourselves with things, do you know what we're doing? We're doing the exact opposite of becoming aware. We're actually putting ourselves right back to sleep. We're pushing things down. We see the goal is like, man, bring what's underneath the surface that we don't really pay, bring that up so we can realize what's going on. But when we soothe ourselves, we just go right back to sleep. I had this crazy image this week as I was thinking about this. Those of you who have had children, how many of you remember when they were newborns and moms, you would feed them, and at the end of the feeding, like your baby would look like he or she was drunk. Remember that? Right? You remember that? And they'd just be like, milk dripping down their face, right? They're just like in nirvana, right? And you're like, woohoo, woohoo, hey, I love my mom, right? It's like milk drunk, right? But see, that's what unhealthy soothing does to us right there, right? We become like a milk drunk baby. We're not aware. We're asleep. So as I started learning to be still and started to become aware of what I was feeling, what I was doing, well, eventually what that did was that allowed me to enter into a place where I could actually be honest about my pain. Honest. To be honest. That's hard for so many of us. But I got to tell you, like, for me, what that meant is learning. I had to become honest about where that pain had come from in my life. I had to be honest about how I had allowed that pain to hurt other people or to hurt myself, right? Or I had to be honest about what that pain meant for me in my life. But see, it's not about being honest and then bringing shame and judgment on yourself. That's what most of us do. We start becoming aware and we come down hard on ourselves. That is not what the point. In fact, if you do that, you know what you're doing? And if you start bringing judgment and shame on yourself, what's going to happen is that judgment and that shame is going to land on top of that pain. And so now it's compounded upon that pain and it's actually then worse. Now you just added into the stuff that you need to work through. You add on more time. So see, it's not about being honest in a way that brings judgment. It's about being honest in a way that brings understanding. Huge difference. Huge. If you ever want to get a picture of honesty, read Psalms. And the psalmist David, amazingly honest. I mean, read Psalm 13. Wow. So see, then being honest about my pain, what that did was that allowed me to actually process my pain. Have you ever heard that phrase, process your pain? A lot of us don't know how to do that. I think it's because there's so many ways that you can process your pain. For me, one of the ways that I've learned to process my pain is meditation. Another way is journaling and writing in my journals. God forbid any of you ever find one of my journals. Right? Writing. There's a lady in our church who I have a ton of respect for. And a couple years ago, she got hit really hard in her life was something very painful, and it impacted her big time. It impacted her her marriage. It impacted her children. It was a severe blow to her life. And, you know, I've had the privilege of sort of walking with her through this journey. And one of the things that I've noticed she started to do is she actually uses art to process her pain. And you know, this was not someone who would consider herself an artist, but she began to just explore and find different ways to process her pain. And art was one of the things that she used. And she sent me an email probably a year ago, year and a half ago, I think, of a painting that she had done. I want you to see this real quick. She said it was okay that I show you. So she sent me this, and this is the note that she wrote me describing it. This is pretty powerful, man. This is heavy stuff. She said, "Hey, Scott, I thought I would forward the painting." She goes, "You might know this, but elephants are fiercely loyal to family and protecting their young. They will stay with an elephant that has died for a few days and just grieve." It's pretty amazing. So this is what she said about this painting. She goes, "This painting is of the angry mom elephant in me that is coming out of my broken heart and wants to protect my boys from this evil." She said, "The fire in the eye and at the feet is the anger. P.S. It's funny because after I did this, the intensity started to diminish." Man, I'm so proud of her because she's learning how to process her pain in a healthy way. She told me on the phone yesterday, she said, "You know, Scott, my pain helped me discover my inner artist." I love that. Yeah, if you think about where great art comes from, often it does come from that place of pain, doesn't it? For others, processing their pain, it could be through dance. That's not my forte, but therapy for some, contemplative practices. I mean, there's so many different ways and things that we'll explore these over you know, in the months ahead and in the years ahead, because this is stuff that's important to us. But here's the thing. Here's what you got to realize. Oftentimes in processing your pain, you need someone to help you do that. You got to know when it's time to reach out beyond yourself, okay? And for some of you, that reaching out needs to be to go and get into regular therapy, counseling. I got to tell you, I've never hidden this from you, all right? One of the greatest decisions I've ever made in my life is to get into a regular rhythm of therapy. To have someone that I see on a very regular basis that is totally outside of my community. No, nobody knows this person who knows me that I know of anyway, and I can sit with that person, and I can share openly and honestly, and they can ask the kind of questions that truly help me. They can help guide me. They create sort of a container by which I can process some of these things in my life, and I got to say, some of you need to take that step, and we can help you with that. If you go to our website, we'll have a on the front page, there'll be a button that says counseling. If you click on that, there's referrals of local counselors that we would recommend. And sometimes you got to search for the right one. It's not always easy. You'll find someone and there won't be that connection and then people give up. Don't do that. Take your time. Find the right person because, you know, it's just knowing, listen, just know when it's time to reach out beyond yourself, because here's what will happen. The more that you process your pain in a healthy way, the more you begin to understand your pain and the less you become overwhelmed by it. And here is the beauty of it, friends, and this is what I'm starting to see in my life now, is ultimately what God can help us to do is instead of ignoring our pain or hiding it or pretending it never happened, do you know what God will actually begin to do? Is he will start to show you how to actually embrace your pain. Embrace it. And I know that might sound kind of weird on the surface, but ultimately what this is about taking your pain, and through that hard work of being still, you start to become aware, and as you become aware, you start to become honest, and as you're honest, you can start to embrace it, which really just simply means trusting God with it. Trusting God with your pain. That's a lot easier said than done, but you can do it. If I can do it, you can do it. I know it may not feel this way to you right now, especially if you're at ground level, but you got to understand, if you're at ground level and you're dealing with some really hard pain in your life right now, your perspective is not all that there is. You have a very limited perspective, all right? And so what I'm here to tell you is, look, There is so much that God can and will do through your pain. There is so much. The image that I think of, and I've used this in talking with people, is an image of a cracked egg. You know, this is what happens. Look, when you go through pain and you go through suffering, that's exactly what happens. It cracks us. And it hurts. But here's the thing you don't realize. Listen, this is so important. When you allow God to work in you and you allow God to work in your pain, you know what happens? Is those cracks actually become openings by which God can get into parts of your life that he could have never otherwise gotten into before. There are now openings, and there are spaces that God can begin to penetrate in your life. Reminds me, there's this Leonard Cohen song. It's called Anthem, and there's this one line. He says, there's a crack in everything. It's how the light gets in. That's it. And so trusting God with your pain, I think it means trusting that God can. Not only can God, but God will do something through my pain. And as a result of your pain, you'll see God and you'll know God in ways you've never known him before. You think you're born again, you'll get born again. You have experiences with God. And you'll echo, man, I think you'll echo the words of St. Augustine. I love it. He says, in my deepest wound, I see your glory and it dazzles me. See, look, ultimately, when you start taking healthy steps in regards to your pain, you start, you know what starts to happen? Oh my gosh, listen, you start becoming aware, not just of your own pain, but you start to become aware of other people's pain. And all of a sudden, what happens is this compassion starts rising up in you in ways that it could have never done before. And what will happen is God will begin redeeming your pain. God start redeeming it. The Holy Spirit begin redeeming your pain. And it's here where we start to discover, man, God uses every part of your story. God uses the parts that feel awful. God uses the parts that feel good. All of it counts. All of it matters. God uses it. And what begins to happen is your pain starts to actually become a platform in your life. Your pain begins to connect you with people that you would have never been connected to otherwise. Your pain, it's almost like it starts to become our common ground. Regardless of culture, regardless of the pain or the suffering, your pain will connect you. Man, listen, this became so real to me a couple years ago when I met this girl. Her name's Tanita. Tanita, I met her in Uganda. At the time, she was 14 years old. And the picture here is of her. She had written out her story. And she was sharing her story with a few of us that were there. And in her story, she was sharing with us how in 2002, her dad died very suddenly. And so, you know, as you can imagine, like, she's sharing the story and the pain that she's feeling and how much she misses. She kept saying daddy. That's what she called him. She said, I just miss my daddy so much. And so, you know, we're all standing there and just like unbelievable, you know. And then she went into another part of her story about how just shortly after her dad died, she started getting very sick. And it was a big mystery. No one could figure out what was wrong with her. So they sent her to the city. They started running her through all these tests. And eventually one of those tests came back indicating that she was HIV positive. I got to tell you, man, it was so heavy hearing her story. And we just stood there, man, our jaws on the ground, just going, my God. And so later that day, I was walking down this little road that there was nobody else walking on this road, and all of a sudden here comes Tanita. And it's so funny because it's so easy to we don't like pain, right? I mean, you know, you wish in those moments that like someone you know pops out of the woods, right, and out of the bush in Africa, and you're like, oh hey Jim, let me talk to you, so I don't have to talk to Tanita because she's a lot of pain. It makes me uncomfortable. But there's nobody there to do that. So Tanita's walking towards me, and I walk up to her, and the only thing I could think of to say to her was this. I said, Tanita, my daddy died too. And I really miss him. And I'm really, really sorry for the pain that you have in your life. And I reached out and I hugged her. We stood there in the middle of this dirt road in Uganda and just wept. I got to tell you, man, like that taught me so much. It taught me, and what I realized looking back now is that what really connected me and what connected me with this person who's from a totally different background, totally different story, what connected me with her was not me walking up and going, hey, let me tell you about the church that I pastor, and let me tell you about some of the success that I've had in ministry, Tanita. It was nothing like that. Hey, let me tell you what I'm good at in my life, Tanita. Let me tell you what my strengths are. No, you know what connected us in that moment? What connected us was our pain. It's our pain. You know what I learned that day? I learned that pain is the universal language. You can go anywhere in this world, and if you're willing to be honest about your pain, you will find yourself connecting with people you would have never, ever imagined. Because people understand pain. Which is why, listen, we're going to close. If you allow God to do his work in you, your scars can truly become a source of strength in your life. See, it's no wonder then, I think, why when it came time for Jesus to give us like this real and tangible way to draw us and unite us together, he used two symbols of horrific pain: the body and the blood. Such a paradox. He could have used any other number of symbols, right? I'll tell you, this week I was thinking about this and about these two images, the body and the blood, and the picture that I got, man, and I don't say this just like this in this emotional way, but I just keep seeing, like imagine Jesus, okay, and he's on the cross, and he's whipped, and a piece of his flesh, just imagine, I know it's gross, but a piece of his flesh falls off and hits the ground, and he looks down, and he looks at you, and he says, pick it up, eat it. And the blood that's gushing out of his side, he takes his hand and he cups it like this and he looks at you and he goes, here, have a drink. Those are the images that these symbols point us to. Why would he do that? Why would he do that? And then why would he tell us to do that on a regular basis? What the heck, man? Could it be that Jesus invites us into his pain and into his suffering to show us and to remind us that we don't have to be afraid of our pain? And not only do we not have to be afraid of our pain, but just like Jesus so perfectly showed us, we can actually embrace and trust God with our pain. Would you stand with me? Let's stand together. God, thank you out of all the things you could have given us to unite around and to come together around. You gave us these symbols that represent just unimaginable pain. And yet at the same time, it's so paradoxical because it also represents such unimaginable healing and grace, mercy and love. And so as we hold these elements that represent your pain, we think about our own pain and we enter into not just your pain or even our pain, but we enter into the pain of one another. The pain that others have experienced throughout history. Past, the present, the future. And maybe for some of us today, maybe what we need to do here is as we partake of these elements, we need to just sort of allow you, God, to give us this courage, this strength, this grace to do what you did. You cried out to your Father. You said, there's any way that this can be avoided, so be it. But then you said, not my will, yours be done. And you embraced your pain all the way to the cross. So God, we ask for courage and strength. Thank you, Lord. Thank you. See, this is the kind of stuff that I think God really wants his church to be about. Somebody sent me this quote, and I just leave you with this. Henry Nouwen said this, a Christian community is therefore a healing community. Not because wounds are cured and pains are alleviated, but because wounds and pains become openings or occasions for a new vision. That's what's waiting on the other side of your pain. Not even on the other side, but in the midst even of it. It's a new vision. See, some of you, as you start to work through your pain, it's exactly what's going to happen. You're going to find things, you're going to ideas, you're going to experience God, all kinds of things are going to be happening in your life that you would have never dreamt possible. Now, I want to give you just a real practical next step. There's a book that I would love to recommend everybody here to pick up. It's called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality by Peter Scazzaro. This is a book that's helped a lot of us sort of take these first steps into emotional health. And I would encourage you, if you're listening online, again, the name of the book is Emotionally Healthy Spirituality by Peter Scazzaro. I encourage you to pick that up, order it online, get it as soon as you can. And as you leave, I say this prayer over you, and I ask you to receive this right now. May the Christ who walks on wounded feet walk with you on the road. May the Christ who serves with wounded hands stretch out your hands to serve. May the Christ who loves with a wounded heart open your heart to love. May you see the face of Christ in everyone you meet, and may everyone you meet see the face of Christ in you. And I pray that over this beautiful tribe called the Orchard. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. And everyone said, amen, amen. I love you. We'll see you.